Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Overnight America, we continue into the 11 o'clock hour. That probably would have been a better topic in the last hour. What are those things you found when you moved into a house? Everyone finds things. When I sold my house in Indiana before moving here, and I tried to get everything out that I could, but there's just some things I couldn't that I hope the homeowner didn't find. I just hope. Oh, boy. Well, what can you do? Nothing bad. I mean, don't get me wrong. It's not like I left a bunch of junk or anything like that, but it's just you get to the point where you get everything, and then you find something that you thought everything was gone, and you're like, man, I just don't have the time or the ability to clear this out right now, like a couple of boxes or whatever. So here's something that's interesting, and you may or may not know this, but sometimes when people take advantage of people that are close to them, not necessarily family, but in an intimate way, let's say you're dating someone or married to someone, and they take out loans in your name and you don't know about it, or if they, you know, borrow money all the time, or maybe they're hiding things secretly, and then after the fact they leave and you find yourself holding the bag and you wonder to yourself, is there anything that could happen? The person just used me. They just used me. Well, you may be a little surprised to know that if you're in an intimate relationship with someone and you file a complaint or go to a lawyer or whatever it is and you try to sue them, the judge is not going to be too happy with you. Why? Because it's different when you're in a relationship with them versus a complete stranger ripping you off. So I'm going to bring up our guest in the next segment. Jill Hasday is her name. When someone close to you commits fraud, what happens, right? The law may come down on you and you might not even know it's coming, which is actually pretty crazy if you think about it. And I found this story too. How about this? Nearly a quarter of us have lied to a partner about our debt. From the New York Post, 24% have lied to a new partner about their debt. They say that, well, it's not around. If you have a lot of debt, you probably will hide it till about the 6-month marker. You keep that under your cap. Because if things don't work out or you don't want to scare them away, you want to get them on the hook first, right? Different types of debt warrant different reactions. 35% see credit card debt worse than student loan debt, and it is worse. Well, I don't know. I mean, I guess you could be about 100 grand in debt for student loans, but, you know, 10 grand debt in credit card is probably a lot easier to pay off. But the interest rates, who knows? But at least when you look at student loan debt, you think, well, actually, it's probably better suited than if you were to just go out there spend a bunch of stuff on junk that has no value to you. They also found that dating dampers related to money include being cheap, being unable to hold down a steady job, and having a bad credit score. Other common causes for concern, 56% say bad manners, a dirty living space, and credit card debt. 50% say that. But a lot of times you hide it. 14% think credit card debt totaling over $10,000 is a red flag. Yeah, that's a lot of money. I've heard stories where people are going to get married and they decide, well, I don't think we can because if we get married, then I'm going to be taking on your debt. And you got a lot of it, an awful lot of it. Kind of scary, right? 58% say they would delay marriage until they were financially stable. 58%. Wow, that makes sense. You know, love is great and all. But what are you going to do? That's a lot of debt. It's scary. And I think sometimes when you hide that, it goes to show you once you get married, does the activities that cause that debt change? Does the lifestyle change? Who knows? It's one thing to have medical debt. Let's say you were underinsured or whatever it is, and you had a medical emergency. You didn't have anyone to help you, whatever it is, and you have this debt because, well, you needed it to save your life. That's one thing. Or a kid's life. Maybe you had a kid that had something happen at a very young age. You incurred a lot of medical debt, but obviously you're going to do everything humanly possible to help your kid out. Well, okay, sure. That's that debt. I totally understandable. But if you find out, well, actually, I like to go to Vegas and gamble all the time. And, you know, I put on stuff on this credit card because I traveling expenses or whatever it is. Or maybe I bought a nice car that I can't afford, overbought on this house, and now I'm underwater in it. Maybe I did this. Maybe I did that. Maybe whatever the story is. That's scary, right? And I think if you hear that sort of thing, you're probably running in the opposite direction half the time. You may like the person, but not that much. Do you like the person 10 grand much? I guess if you're loaded, who knows? There's another one that said, money can't buy love, but here's the most sought-after traits. Most popular is kindness. 89% of women and 86% of men say they look for kindness. Not money, kindness. Second most popular, supportiveness. Then followed by intelligence. Looks, wealth, and power were less likely to be considered critical. Isn't that nice? Only 3% of women globally said they prefer very muscular physiques. Yeah, right. I can believe that. So you're saying the most round guy you can find, that's going to be the most attractive thing to you? Okay. Physical traits include attractive smile, attractive eyes, average chest if you're a man. If you're saying that, you know, that's you prefer an average chest and average back end, according to this survey. That's fascinating. Financial security. Females, 44% said financial security a top priority in a male. An attractive face was only 41%. Wow. That's a little surprising. So there's everything's looking for something different. Now, what happens if someone takes advantage of you? Maybe their intentions were not pure from the beginning. Maybe you think you're trying to find a love connection, but in the end, they were just there for the benefits of it. Maybe they were hoping you'd pay things off or give them a loan or buy them this or buy them that or whatever it is. And then they poof, disappear. And you say, this person stole from me. Well, a judge doesn't look at it that way if you're in an intimate relationship. Intimate deceptions in our author, Jill Hasday, coming up next to talk about how, you know, if you're ever caught up in something like this, you are going to find yourself shocked that there is the judge ain't going to be too sympathetic. It's Overnight America, KMOX. And joining us now, law professor at the University of Minnesota, Jill Hasday. Thank you for coming on to KMOX.
Thanks for having me.
So your new book is Intimate Lies and the Law. I want to know where your interest begins in this topic and what really you cover.
Okay, so as my dedication makes clear, my own loved ones did not inspire me to write that book. I want to be very clear about that. So I teach and write about family law, and I would occasionally come across these cases where an intimate would be deceitful and inflict enormous damage and then get away with it because court said that if you're deceived with an intimacy, you can't access ordinary legal remedies for deception. And that always struck me as very interesting, and I just kept it in mind as something I wanted to pursue.
So why wouldn't that be looked at as fraud in court, if that's the purpose of the interaction?
Well, that's what my book argues, that if an intimate steals your money or inflicts physical harm or causes emotional injury, you should have the same remedies you would ordinarily have when suing a stranger. But courts generally start with the assumption that if you're deceived with an intimacy, ordinary rules don't apply to you.
Wow. So how many cases were you able to find where this sort of activity was happening?
Oh, there are hundreds of cases in the book. Intimate deception is more common than we'd like to believe, and mm-hmm. that is certainly illustrated in the book. But there's just an enormous amount of cases. I mean, one thing that's interesting is, you know, people haven't really written about this body of law, but when you start looking, there's so many cases. It's really, as I say in the book, it's like a whole legal field hidden in plain sight.
Yeah. Is Dateline NBC your favorite show?
One thing that's interesting is when you start looking for it, intimate deception is everywhere. So, for instance, one category I talk about is deceptive bigamy, you know, someone who has more than one wife. Mm-hmm. They don't know about each other. If you start looking, it's in the news all the time.
Oh, yeah. All the time. Well,
all the time, yeah.
We see these cases that pop up, and they make for good titles. You know, people are really good at writing these clickbaity titles, but you really don't get to see the aftermath of what happened. So the people that have been deceived, it's pretty devastating to them. And normally, you know, they may feel like they're like, oh, some people may find sympathy, some people may put them into a punchline or a joke, but there's some real big damage that happens to these people that have been deceived.
Oh, I mean, intimate deception can inflict enormous damage of a in a variety of ways. So first is financial damage. So one reason people deceive their intimates is to extract money from them. Mm-hmm. But also, even if they're not aiming for financial damage, they can inflict it. So suppose someone tells you, I love you, quit your job, move across the country, come live with me, we'll get married, and deceives you to conceal that he's already married to someone else.
Yeah.
Or has a fiance. He's not trying to inflict financial harm, but he can inflict tremendous financial harm in addition to emotional harm, right? Because you've sold your house at a loss, maybe, you've quit your job, et cetera. So there's a lot of financial damage. There can also be physical damage. Someone deceives you to conceal they have an STD. Mm. There can obviously be emotional damage. The injuries can be quite wide-ranging.
Yeah. Jill Hasday joining us here in the new book is Intimate Lies in the Law, which you can find now. So when you look at these things and these stories normally, like I mentioned the datelines because you see a lot of these different storylines brought up in, you know, the Friday night programming or whatnot. A lot of times this is what happens. You watch it as an outsider and you say, how did you not know? Sometimes you yell at your TV and you'll wonder, couldn't you tell they were just using you for your, you know, fill in the blank? It's not always that simple. The people that get wrapped up in these things, they honestly believe that there's people out there that are trying to not use them, but they are actually, their intentions are to use them.
Okay, so I think both ordinary people and courts have a tendency to blame people for being duped. You should have known, you should have been suspicious, you should have investigated. And there's a lot of reasons why we want to think that. First, events tend to look more obvious in hindsight. When you know he turned out to be a fraudster, of course it seems obvious that he would be. But also psychologically, I think we want to believe that only the particularly foolish and gullible can be duped, because then, of course, we're smart. You know, we're protected. In fact, detecting deception can be extremely difficult, even for people of ordinary or above average shrewdness and sophistication.
You ever find that maybe the person that is being duped finds themselves holding the bag at the end? So one of the examples you give is, you know, acquire government benefits or whatnot, or, you know, maybe there's a loan involved where they take them out and the person skips town afterwards, and you find that the person that was deceived also is the one that's holding the bag in the end, and they're the ones that could get in trouble for, let's say, the loan or maybe fraud for the government, and maybe if they filled out documents incorrectly, thinking they were going to be in it together. Do you ever find the victim getting victimized again?
Oh, right. So in general, in marriage, there's very few remedies if you're in an ongoing marriage for financial deception, and one common form is someone takes out a credit card that both people are responsible for, and it's a secret, you know, they don't know, the other person doesn't know.
Yeah.
Many courts have held the duped spouse responsible for that credit card. One of my many reform proposals in the book is that I think credit card companies should have to do much more to ensure that both spouses are actually aware of the account and have agreed to the expenses. I also think they should send, if this is a joint account, they should send separate statements to both spouses so they can monitor the situation.
Mm.
And if they don't do that, I think the person who really didn't know about the account shouldn't be on the hook.
You know, and you hear these stories too, and I'll read these different stories, because there are a lot of predatory lending things that go around. People will send you a letter in the mail. Oh, you're pre-approved for $5,000. Just sign this and send it back. Well, they'll sign it on behalf of someone else. These people that are trying to lend, they don't care. You know, they just know that they're going to be able to collect at a, you know, 30% APR or whatever. So, you know, then something happens to the person, they leave, or, you know, something else happens to them, and then they go after the person thinking they're the ones that signed it, when really it was someone that was like a spouse, or, you know, someone that was close to them that was opening their mail on their behalf. So they actually hold those people responsible?
Yes, even when it's, your scenario was actually more sympathetic than the cases I'm talking about, because
yeah,
the person may not have, you know, realized. But even in a situation where there's actually very good evidence that one spouse deceptively concealed, you know, a secret mortgage, or that he sold the house to a girlfriend, courts are often unwilling to give remedies. And sometimes, of course, one of my other points in the book is that thinking that the remedy is you can go to court and get damages is not really enough, because a lot of times by the time it all comes to light, the person has no money.
Oh, yeah.
So it's much better, I think, to stop it before the injury can be inflicted. So to make it harder for the person to open the credit card, or harder for the person to get the mortgage without the spouse knowing, because often by the time the deception comes to light, even if a court was willing to give a remedy, that person has no money left.
Oh, boy.
You know, they've taken the second mortgage because they have a gambling addiction, which they're also deceiving you to conceal it. You know, it's all gone. The money's gone.
Intimate Lies in the Law is the name of the book. Jill Hasday joining us here on KMOX. So you mentioned, too, that the way that the laws are somewhat relaxed, you say it may enable certain people to take advantage of other people. Sometimes I wonder about human nature. Do they even know that the laws are relaxed? Maybe it's just part of their psyche where they just want to go out there and they feel like they can get away with it. They don't know that it's a calculated risk that they may be able to get away with it under a court of law if they were ever to be caught. So you actually believe because of these relaxed laws, it helps encourage people to, or at least enable them to want to do things like this?
Well, okay, so two things. So one, I agree that there can be tremendous incentives to deceive, regardless of what the law does, because even if there were more remedies, most people think, I'll never get caught, my intimate would never sue me. And generally, deception, you can capture enormous gains, financially, physically, emotionally. So I don't think anything the law could do would stamp out deception. Mm-hmm. But I do think that the law's decision to generally protect intimate deceivers can create incentives to deceive, if only because even if deceivers aren't thinking about it, they're just not hearing about cases where people are held liable. You know, this is sort of our background assumption. Again, it's all hidden in plain sight. You just don't see cases where people are held liable for deceiving their spouses or their other intimates. And I think that creates our common sense of how this is going to go. It's just going to all be private and not, the law's not going to help you.
Mm. Intimate Deceivers kind of sounds like a 90s grunge album, a little bit.
Oh, I mean, and in fact, once you start looking, as of course I did, every novel, every song almost, you know, every television show, Intimate Deception drives the plot.
Uh-huh.
It's ubiquitous.
Uh-huh. Are there any warning signs that you see people could look out for?
Okay, so one of my bottom lines is I don't blame people. If you were deceived, it's not, you're not alone. It's not your fault. But there are steps you can take to protect yourself. There are some, it's not perfect, but there's some public records available. You can ask to speak to their friends and associates. Many of these aren't ideal because the person is likely to know that you are investigating them. Uh-huh. But if you are suspicious, you can, you know, speak to people. See if their story makes sense. Often there's inconsistencies in the story. It depends on the individual, you know, individual deception. You can take out your credit report and see if there's unusual activity. Mm-hmm. In general, though, it's easier than we'd like to think to deceive us because we're very bad at spotting deception, especially from an intimate. And social norms tell us to trust our intimates and not investigate. And it's hard to investigate without the investigation itself jeopardizing the relationship because the person finds out about it.
Yeah. When you say intimate relationships, so you mean mostly like spouse, girlfriend, boyfriend, or is there other categories that would fit under that?
So I cover, spouses, romantic partners, sexual partners, but also the book talks about deception within the family.
Right.
So,
like if you grab the kid's social security number and of course they're
right,
too young.
Right. And what's interesting is courts are very forgiving of parents who've deceived their children, even if the children were adults at the time, when generally parents don't really have rights over children anymore. Mm-hmm. In contrast, if you're a kid who deceived your parent, the courts will come down on you. They're very unsympathetic to that. Mm-hmm. Interestingly, when siblings outside the parent-child relationship, if it's, say, siblings deceiving each other, they just treat those like strangers.
Oh, interesting.
So it is very interesting. So sometimes courts are very expansive in defining intimacy. You went on a date once, you had sex once, courts treat you as intimates. But in the family, outside of parent, child, you know, husband, wife, spouse, anything like aunt, uncle, cousins, siblings, they just, it's not that they say intimate deception is bad, they just don't consider you intimates.
Yeah. So like you said,
strangers. It's just like strangers.
Huh. So what do you think could happen within the confines of the law? If there's something that you were able to go out and lobby for a change in order to make things better for the people that were deceived, what would you encourage?
I basically want two lines of things to happen. So the first thing is when someone is deceived with an intimacy and they go to court, I think court should start with the assumption that they're going to have the same access to remedies that they would have if they were equivalently deceived outside of intimacy. So if you could sue a deceptive stranger for robbing you or inflicting physical injury or causing emotional harm, you should be able to present the same evidence and bring the same claims for battery or deceit or intentional infliction of emotional distress, whatever. The fact that you're an intimate shouldn't be a categorical bar. But I also think that courts and legislatures should do a better job of preventing intimate deception before it takes place. So they shouldn't wait for litigation. They should try to counter the incentives to deceive. They should make it harder for deceitful people to get away with their plans. And they should limit the damage that a deceitful intimate can inflict.
Interesting. So that's the name of the book, Intimate Lies in the Law. Jill Hasday, if people wanted to read the book, check it out for themselves, where can they find it?
If you look at my website, jillhasday.com, it has all the information. Also, Intimate Lies in the Law is available on Amazon and every other online bookseller.
Great. Jill Hasday, HASDAY.com. You said that's your website?
Yep.
Perfect. Intimate Lies and the Law you can find on Amazon. Jill, thank you so much for coming on to Overnight America.
Thanks for having me.
It's kind of a fascinating topic. It is like a Dateline NBC type of storyline, isn't it? So I wanted to give you this scenario since we're kind of in the intimate relationship topic frame. There was a man that outsmarted a bad date. Now, if you ever had a bad date, have you ever slipped out of a date, mid-date? Have you ever done that? But then again, have you ever been on a terrible date that you wanted to slip out? What's your story? I'd love to hear it. 436-7900 is the number. Or 800-925-1120 on Overnight America KMOX. Overnight America. Glad you're here with us. I'm glad we're together. So glad. Have you ever had a terrible date situation where you thought about leaving or you actually did leave mid-date? Called it off? What happened? There's a story there. I want to hear it. 436-7900. If you're in the St. Louis area, you can call or text that. Or also 800-925-1120. We'll get to some of your stories coming up. I want to get to Charlie first, all the way in Minnesota. Hey, what's going on?
Have you been keeping up with your ghost?
No. What do you mean? Have I been talking to the ghost that's in this building? No, I have not.
Oh, they haven't been keeping up with you.
I haven't heard from them. I haven't considered talking to them. However, I have been paranoid ever since that night because whenever I walk around the building knowing I'm the only one in here, I look around both ways. I'm always keeping an eye out. And the things that can't be explained, I try not to mentally get it into my head that it's a ghost because it drives you crazy if that's the case.
Oh, okay. I just thought after your ghost hunting, I thought they'd keep in touch with you.
Why are you thinking about the ghost in this building, and why are you bringing this up right now?
Because it was funny when you guys were doing it.
Yeah, it was funny. And when they said we had, what, three or four ghosts hanging around here? Come on, Charlie. Yeah. Why did you have to bring this up right now? Are you trying to make me a little paranoid?
No.
No. We should do a follow-up. But our plan right now is to do a follow-up around Halloween, bring him back in. But
Well, if you stir them up sooner than that, well, I'm sure they'll let you know that they're around. So when they don't know it, and you're out there looking for them, walking around.
All right. So, Charlie, do you want to address the ghost directly right now? Do you want to say something to the ghost, and I'll let you know if there's any reaction.
If I was to say anything to them, if there is any around there, I'd just let them know when you're there how they sound.
Okay. You know what they sound like to me? Lots of pops and creaks, because that's basically my joints are starting to give out on me.
So how have you been?
I've been all right. I've been trying to do my thing. It seems like I've been trying to get a lot of yard work done, which is not going all that well right now. I need the motivation. Well. You know, if maybe the motivation is there's ghosts in the house, so it's probably better for me to be outside and away from
that. Well, good. What does your wife think of that?
She said, don't talk about it. She said, don't welcome that sort of thing into this house. Get it out of here. That's what she says.
Good.
Yeah.
Good. Good.
Uh-huh. Are you hurting yourself anymore? I know you're not out there shoveling snow, but still, you overdo it. You feeling all right?
Oh, I'm doing great.
Good. Very good.
Doing great.
Well, all right, Charlie. Thanks for bringing up the ghost. Now you have me paranoid. Thanks a lot.
but yesterday we had a couple of tornadoes hanging around.
Yeah. Okay. Up in Minnesota, you get tornadoes there?
Yep.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Well, yep.
I thought the conditions wouldn't be all that great for tornadoes that far north.
Oh, yeah. But other than that, can you do me a favor?
Yeah.
Can you talk to your station owner or manager and relate to them? Turn up the antenna a little higher.
Are you having a hard time getting us?
Uh-huh.
Okay.
Uh-huh, because every night when I tune in, I get a lot of, like, squelching.
Oh, interesting. Well, it'd probably be better. Do you have email?
You know, like, huh?
You have email?
Uh-huh.
You go online. Just go to KMOX.com, and there's email addresses right there for everyone. Just message the program director or our engineer, and you can ask that question. They'll have a better answer for that.
Yeah, because, like, at night, I tune into you, and all I get is a bunch of, like, squelching, and I thought, you got to be kidding. And if I think I got you, it's...
It wasn't always like that, is what you're saying.
Then it's down in Iowa.
Oh, weird. Okay. Well, all right.
And then, like tonight, I had Iowa. Mm-hmm. Now it's back to you guys.
Oh, weird atmospheric thing. Yeah, I guess that can happen when you're that far out.
I thought, do they drop the signal or the deal down at night?
No, we're one of those, what they call a clear channel station, so we're the ones that get to stay powered up all the way through the night. So there could be other things interfering with that 11:20 a.m.
Right. Yeah, and I thought, I could get your gate. I could listen to the Cubs. I mean, the Cubs. They're playing the Cards tomorrow. But
yeah,
I could be tuned into your Cards, but here lately...
You're pretty far away. I mean, you're probably, 550, 600 miles away, something like that?
Yep.
Yeah, so you're pretty far. So that's pretty impressive
living,
you can listen
if
to
I was
us.
Living, well, if I was living further up the road from where I'm at in another town,
yeah, okay,
I could tune to WOAI in my hometown down there 1,500 miles away, crystal clear every night, but I'm not over there.
I see. All right, Charlie, good to hear from you. Thanks for calling in.
Yeah.
All right. Have a great night. Yeah. Thanks for all the ghosts. I got to worry about that. See, normally at the top of the hour when we're playing news, CBS News, KMOX News, gives me an opportunity to go run to the bathroom, maybe get a little sip of water, something like that. Now I think I'm just going to stay in the studio. I don't know if I want to go out. I don't feel like the ghosts are going to be all that friendly to me if I do go do that. Thanks a lot, Charlie, calling them out like that. You know, if you've been on a terrible date and something happened and you wanted to split and you did, oh man, or have you had a date leave on you? Let me tell you this story, and maybe you have something that is similar to this. So a man's date wanted to literally just rack up the bill. So it was a blind date. He was set up with this girl and he goes to a nice restaurant and he gets there and he was informed that by the girl, she didn't really have any interest in dating him. She was only there for the food. So what does she do? She buys a $75 surf and turf, starts off with a $20 cocktail, then gets another cocktail, and then another one, and then finishes it off with a $40 cocktail. So he got a $24 steak. She orders all of this food, hundreds of dollars worth of food and drink. And right off the bat, you know, while they're ordering, she says, well, this is after she's already ordered, says to the guy, you know, actually, I don't think we're going to date. I don't want to date. I only came here for the free meal. And the guy feels like he's a slap in the face because, you know, when you go out on a date, you have these expectations that, well, there's some interest there. You want to be able to find out if you have anything in common or if it's going to be something that could be long-term. But if they're only there and they have zero interest, we're just there to get a nice meal, to just ring it out, and then, you know, go home and never see you again. There was no interest in any dating whatsoever. You know what the guy did? he says, I need to go to the bathroom. So he talks to the waiter and says, this lady, she gets here and she's just here for the food. She completely misled me. So here, I'm going to pay for my meal. Here's my money for the steak. Here's the tip. I want you to do a separate check for her and I'm going to leave. And the waiter said, okay. So he pays his portion and leaves. Well, she doesn't hear anything. Of course, she's pretty upset about all of this. Later finds out she didn't have any money on her. So she had to call her dad to come bring some money to pay for the meal. So and needless to say, they never spoke again, which is probably for the best. Now, I don't know. This guy that takes a lot of guts to pull a move like that off. All right. Do you have any terrible dating scenarios? Anything happened to you that stands out as just, I can't believe this happened? 436-7900. Please tell me. I want to hear it. 800-925-1120. This is Overnight America KMOX. You want to know what some of the reaction was to that man who paid for only his portion and left? All right, let's find out. Here's what the people had to say online when they found out that he split. Said, after he did not hear from the date after the ordeal, he stopped back at the restaurant later that night. That's when he found out that the woman had to call her dad. Dad, I lost another one. Dad. User explained that the friend cut ties with the other friend after he found out that she would try to pull something like that. Which I get. Yeah, you're going to have to pick sides. You can't be friends with both of them after that. That is one fork in the road you're going to have to figure out. The man was widely praised for his decision to skip out on the date. They said he handled it like a champ. Wow, what a way to handle a date. Get out of here. We'll see you later. Some said it may be a little bit unfair. They comment the morality of his decision, saying that if you would have just left him or left her and didn't say anything, come on now. That's a cheap trick right there. Yikes. It says, however, some did shame his behavior as cowardly. Wasn't the fairest action. Many people joke that the waiter is the true hero here, the one that would allow him to pay his portion and then try to stick her with her part of it. But honestly, if you're going to show up and you're only there to take advantage of someone, that's pretty lousy, right? That's lousy, 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 lousy. I don't really have any great old dating stories. I mean, I haven't gone on a lot of dates in my lifetime. Luckily, I don't have to worry about that anymore. It's so much easier just being married, where you don't have to worry about this kind of thing. I look at friends of mine who are single and unmarried, and they are always constantly worried about how they look, and maybe are they going to find someone, are they not, and this and that, and I'm so glad I'm not in that world. It's so much stress. And the problem when you're a guy is, particularly one like me, you can't read signs. So you don't know what's a good and bad situation. Oh, man. So luckily, I'm out of that world. Now, what also is terrible in the world where there's all these dating apps and everyone, back when I was going through college and even after, these dating apps were kind of like taboo. You're like, oh, you met someone online? They look down at you. It's an unconventional way, but now it's like what everyone does. Kind of a strange shift when it comes to that. When it comes to dating and things, let me tell you about this story. Future of the city is childless. People are moving to big cities because they like the appeal of not being forced to have kids. Like, okay, you're going to live on a nice plot of land with a white picket fence and you're going to find a wife and then you can get married and have a couple of kids. And then one day you'll retire with a little nest egg and maybe get a little place on the lake and a boat and you'll be all set. Well, last year, for the first time in four decades, something strange happened in New York City. It shrank. New York City shrank. So supposedly we're living in the golden age of American metropolis. This is from The Atlantic. They wrote about this, where they say that some stop playing out across the country. Dirty and violent downtowns. The mean streets of the 70s became clean and safe in the 90s. Young college graduates flocked to these neighborhoods in the 2000s. Rich companies followed with their downtown offices. New York was the poster child of this urban renaissance. It attracted people with wealth. Housing prices soared. Young families said, well, now I can't afford to go there. Why? Because young families don't necessarily have all that income, that disposable income. As someone that may be single and working, and that's the only responsibility they have is themselves. So what happens? Well, if the young families can't afford to move into New York, and then they have the hassle of living in these high rises, and well, now you're raising your kid, and okay, now I got to go down 40 flights to get to the floor, and now I got to find a way to get the kid to school, and now I got to do this, now I got to do that, and I got to go take the dog outside, and it's a big hassle, and you got to dress up, you can't just let the dog out the back door because, you know, again, you're on the 40th floor. Everything's a hassle. So what happens? They just didn't move. They said, it's not worth it. I'm not going to move to downtown New York. I'll just live somewhere else. And how about that? New York City, for the first time in decades, shrank. No longer are you seeing the young kids there. It's a little concerning. San Francisco, Seattle, Washington, D.C. No group is growing faster than rich, college-educated whites without children. Those are the ones that find it appealing. Cities have effectively traded away their children, swapping capital for kids. And this is what they say. Okay, so what? This is what The Atlantic says. Childlessness is no sin. There's no ethical duty to marry. And then it says the economic consequences of the childless city goes deeper. For example, the cost of urban living may be discouraging some couples from living as many children as they prefer or having them as many children as they prefer. That means the American cities aren't just expelling school-age children. They're actively discouraging them from being born in the first place, with the fertility rate lowering and lowering too. That's not a good combination. It also mentions that as growth stalls, native-born low and middle-class workers become frightened in anticipation to protect themselves. The white turn to retrograde strongmen who promise to wall out foreigners. Oh, Atlantic, you had me all the way till the end, and it's got to be some anti-immigration propaganda that you're trying to pull there. Isn't it always with those magazines? They always wait till the end and they throw in some little bit of propaganda. What can you do? But no, I mean, imagine you're just someone that's living and you're enjoying yourself here in St. Louis, Missouri. And what a culture shock that is going to a big city where your rent doubles and you got about a third of the size of what you would have for something out here. Everything costs more expensive. You can't afford to have a car because parking probably costs as much as you're paying rent or mortgage right now. And, you know, everything's a hassle. No thanks. Not for me. I just don't see the appeal in that sort of thing. And I don't understand why so many other people do. But it makes sense. It makes sense. Our friend Rich Rubino is coming up. We have him on Mondays. We get a little bit of history, political history with him. We're going to preview the Democratic debates. And then last week, there was a pretty big day in political history. And it wasn't the Apollo landings. In fact, the Apollo landings kind of overshadowed this big political event. We'll talk about that next.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s. And each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of four lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.